Hello and welcome to Argue the Toss at GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew. And together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games and films and stuff.
Indeed we are.
Yes.
And it is Season 4, Episode 8.
Yes.
And today's topic.
Yeah.
That sort of like...
We're just so in sync
Beckett
today.
Pause then.
Yeah. We went to see Wes Anderson's new film Isle of Dogs yesterday, and we're going to be talking about that and some other related stuff, which you'll have to wait until the end of the podcast to find out what that is. Don't want to drop all the surprises too early.
Do you want to give the synopsis?
Yeah, so it's the new Wes Anderson film. It's all stop motion in a sort of follow-up to... First Fantastic Mr. Fox is the film that he did previously, which was entirely stop motion, but apparently he also used quite a lot of it in The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, and kind of got into the idea of making stop motion films from there. So I think he's kind of making it part of his oeuvre now as a technique. And so this one it's got a hugely kind of impressive cast. It's got Bryan Cranston is kind of in the lead role. It's also got Ed Norton, Bill Murray is in it, obviously, being a Wes Anderson film. Who else is
Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson in it. Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. Who's the other woman who played the little dog?
I thought Scarlett Johansson was the little dog.
No, the Oracle.
Oh, the Oracle. Oh, I don't know.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. So anyway, it's got a big, impressive cast.
Yes, it does. And it's kind of like the kind of premises of it is that is it near future Japan, or I forget where they frame it.
It is 20 something or other, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think.
A cat loving and dog hating government exiles all dogs to an island previously used for just storing rubbish. And that's kind of it, really. And a young pilot, he's called the Little Pilot, his name is Atari, visits the island in a small plane to find his dog, Spots, and the film is kind of a quest to find Spots and foil the kind of conspiracy of the evil cat-loving, dog-hating government who put them all there in the first place.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's basically it. It's like a really simple story.
I
think the first thing is it looks beautiful.
Really does.
It's really, really stunning animation right from the beginning. Mm. It has the sort of taiko drummers. Is it taiko drumming?
I thought it was taiko. Taiko, I think.
Yeah. Sort of spotlit. And it looks like they're made out of some kind of wax or something, the human characters.
Yeah.
Because the flesh tones are really subtle and amazing, and they look sort of soft and, sort of malleable and, not sort of like polished wood or papier-mâché or something. They're just incredible puppets, absolutely incredible models. They just sort of look fleshy and doughy and, amazing. It's got some like really nice nods to Kurosawa films. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of the Seven Samurais in there in some of the shots of the dogs and dramatic angles and on the brow of hills and stuff like that. I didn't get all the Kurosawa references, but as I understand, there are a lot in there. Could be some from the Iron Throne, perhaps some of the shots of the interior shots of like sort of the seating hall and stuff like that, and the stage was very sort of throne room like. It's just overall, it's just really, really beautiful.
Yeah. It turns out that when you give Wes Anderson like full control over the control that you get with animation over how you set up your shots, he just kind of goes full Wes Anderson in it. So I think maybe like 80% of the shots in that film were symmetrical, and they're all the standard sort of face on thing. And what it kind of has these really cool ones where it will be it I don't know if it's like a split diopter shot where you'll have one character like quite close in the foreground. They're always like directly facing the audience, and then there will be someone talking in the background. They're just really visually interesting, and
yeah, that's Kurosawa again.
Yeah,
those kinds of shots, and yeah, it is. Well, he's always had that kind of doll's house kind of aesthetic. With the sort of Royal Tenenbaums, he does that as well.
Yeah.
You know, has this house with this family in, and they're like the dolls. And you know, I got the special edition DVD box set of that, and there's little drawings of the house and them in it, and yeah, sort of cross section. Yeah, so yeah, it just feels very Wes Anderson, which some people love. I do.
Yeah.
Lots of people don't. It's like he's quite sort of Marmite in that way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I loved it in that respect. Mm. Yeah, and I suppose like some of the characters we should probably talk about. Is it five dogs?
Yeah, it's five dogs, and they're called... so you've got Brian... I love this name. I know it's in the
trailer. Yeah, I know.
So it's really good. Brian Cranston plays Chief, who is the kind of... throughout he's saying, oh, this pack doesn't have a leader, I'm not the leader, you're not the leader, we're all leaders, but he's kind of the leader. And the other dogs are all called the Duke, King, Boss, and
Rex,
yeah, all just like synonyms for king or leader, which I think is really, I thought was a really nice little touch. And yeah, they're all pretty good. I mean, Bryan Cranston and Ed Norton are kind of both the leads in among the pack of dogs, and they're both like kind of really good. I was a bit skeptical at first of them casting Edward Norton in a primarily voice role, because he does have a very distinctive voice. And
oh, I was going to say completely the opposite.
Really?
All the way through, I was like, who the hell is that?
Really?
I do not recognize that voice at all.
Oh, fair enough.
Like, everybody else had a really distinctive voice, but I was just like, who is that? It's like, is it Chris Pine? Is it a Chris? Or is it? Yeah. No, yeah.
I mean, I guess I knew going in, and I had sort of read up on it before going in. So I was just immediately waiting to see, oh, which one of these is Ed Norton? Oh, it's that guy. But he has, for the first, like, quarter of an hour of the film, there was a thing where there was a disconnect between what I was seeing and what I was hearing. Like, I was watching the dog and I was hearing Ed Norton's voice, and they just kind of didn't mesh for me. It just sounded like Ed Norton playing a dog. But that did go away for me pretty early on. So my fears were not all that founded.
I think, to be fair, he is the blandest character out of all of the dogs. Yeah, because I don't remember his backstory at all. Whereas, you know, there's the Jeff Goldblum character who, like, is the rumor monger, and every, like, location they go to, there's this sort of like, oh, have you heard the rumor about this? And they're all like, no. And their ears prick up, and it's like a really cute joke. And then there's the one who's like in a baseball shirt, because he used to be like, and then there's the dog who was the sort of advertised dog food, and then there's Brian Cranston's one who was the stray. Like, what was the other one? Like a nice dog.
Oh, yeah, I can't off the top of my head remember his backstory. He was just kind of, yeah, I know you are right. But like, I thought he had a kind of an interesting personality and counterpoint to Brian Cranston's chief.
Who was more conflicted, wasn't he? Whereas the other one was just a straight down the line, a good dog, kind of dog that, you know, the loyal kind of, well-behaved dog who's the alpha but is nice.
So they were both good. Brian Cranston is always pretty good, and like, he's kind of got a history of actually being a voice actor as well. He used to do like cartoons and stuff. He used to be before he was kind of famous as a screen actor. And what I did sort of think about it was for the rest of the dogs, but certainly for some of the characters, there was no need to like hire a. Like, it would have been better to hire a professional voice actor than to just hire a famous person. Scarlett Johansson, fantastic actress, not a distinctive voice. Like, I didn't recognize it was her until after, you know, coming out of the film and like looking her up.
Okay, I saw her in the credits, but she does have a distinctive voice because it's really husky.
Yeah, okay, I guess, but it wasn't some. It's not something that you would. Like, it's not Tara Reid husky. It's not something that you would be able to pick out. Well, it's not something that I was able to pick out, at least.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I guess it's horses for courses, isn't it?
Some
people key into voices, some don't. But, yeah, I mean, it was quite a small... they're just trying to sell a film, basically. They just want bankable names on these things.
I suppose that's true.
I suppose stop motion is a risk in America.
Yeah.
Not so much in the UK, because we're kind of really good at it and love it and, you know, kind of more open to it. So I guess they're like, you know, we got to get some bankable names on this shit because this is not going to fly. We got some puppet. We got some Japanese puppets and talking dogs. And it's not for kids. So, so, you know, it's one of those business decisions, isn't it? But I did like the fact that Scarlett Johansson, she's playing the sort of classic kind of Tom and Jerry female dog with the diamante collar who they're all supposed to go hubba hubba for. And there is a sort of moment where they almost do that, but then they don't. And she does become a love interest, but she has been a show dog, but she's a bit don't mess as well. She's like, you know, you don't have to worry about me, honey, I can take care of myself. She's a complete sort of lone wolf, really. So yeah, I like the way they subverted that kind of what could have been a really tropey character.
Is it a shame she doesn't get kind of more to do?
Exactly. I was waiting for her to get to do something, but she actually doesn't. Yeah. She does kind of get rescued.
Yes. And kind of the only other, like, there's one other major kind of female canine character in the film, and her only role is to get pregnant in the film. It's just, like, it's not fantastic.
She doesn't even speak,
does
she?
No, I don't think she does. It's not brilliant.
No.
There is another lead female role who gets a lot more to do, but that has kind of its own problems, which I like. I don't. Should we talk about that now?
So we might as well get into that.
Yes.
The sort of headline issues with the Isle of Dogs, which kind of before. Was it as the film was released in the US? Because I think there's been a bit of a lag. Critics, particularly sort of people of Asian heritage, criticizing the fact that it revels in Japanese culture and, you know, depends on it utterly for the sort of flavor and atmosphere of the story, but then sidelines Japanese characters. Their dialogue is either translated, and largely it isn't, so it's just foreign. And all the main characters are essentially American. Well, they're American actors. So they read as Western. So apart from the one boy who's out to find his dog, but he also isn't translated. So that is a problem.
So the other female character is a human character who is from, I think it's Connecticut, is mentioned in the film.
Isn't it Ohio? She goes back to Ohio.
Oh yeah,
she got a ticket to Ohio. Can't say it. Ohio.
Cincinnati rather than Connecticut in Ohio. And her kind of role in it as like the white American character is to, without spoiling anything, foil the plot of the kind of evil Japanese government that exists in the film.
So she's essentially sort of white savior.
It is a little bit uncomfortably white saviorist,
It is, yeah. She kind of galvanizes the Japanese students who are sort of pro-dog and want to sort of restore dogs to society as opposed to sort of leaving them on Trash Island. And so they're having this meeting and then she steps in and kind of takes over. The Japanese characters are sidelined in their own story, which is a shame. And a weird decision by Wes Anderson.
Yeah,
But then
it
he kind of doesn't have a great reputation when
No,
it comes to
absolutely.
people of color in his films.
No.
You know, the sort of like Indian valet in Tenenbaums and yeah, sort of you know, there's a lot of sort of manservants and there's a real sort of sense of colonialism in his characters of color, which I think hopefully now he might deal with now that the voices are getting louder.
And it's not something that like kind of even in the even in the sort of reviews that were directly criticizing this, they were all kind of careful to note that this is not something that spoils or ruins the film, and there's not really a sense of there's nothing kind of particularly horrible or malicious in there, and it generally portrays Japanese culture with respectfully, but it is still very clearly the perspective of like a tourist rather than someone who is like really familiar with this. It just hits the kind of
Yeah, it does.
notes that we know as West as a Western culture.
Yeah, that was really notable. It's like there were cherry blossom, there was a sushi scene, there was a kabuki
They
scene,
were
there
like,
was a sumo scene, just like all the boxes were ticked. It's like, God, really? Yeah, and the kid's called Atari, which, and then there's a woman who's called Yoko Ono. It's like it was just so Japan served up for a Western audience. It
I
was
like that
just.
was actually Yoko Ono voicing that character, because I like I came out of the cinema as well and I said this. Oh, is there really a character just called Yoko Ono? And Fraser, who we went to see it with, said, "Oh yeah, no, that is actually Yoko Ono voicing
Oh,
Yoko Ono, so that's why that
okay.
is."
But still, I still feel like, you know, that is for the Western palette. You know, she's not a big character. She doesn't do anything either, like most of the women apart from the white woman.
There's no reason for
And
her to be Yoko Ono other than we're all
no.
familiar with Yoko
Exactly. It's like, oh, here's a palatable Japanese person for Western culture.
Well,
So,
I don't know how palatable we find Yoko
well, everyone
Ono.
knows her. So, yeah, so it was just a bit of a shame and weird.
Yeah, it was.
And yeah, and then the production, even behind the camera, there are about three Japanese names that I spotted in the credits. So one was there was one person on the writing team, there was one of the composers, and then I think there was an editor. So yeah, could do better, Wes Anderson. Love your films, but could do better. Sort it out. And that doesn't mean just eliminating people of color from your films either. So yeah, so that was a shame, but there we go. Other than that, it was like the writing was nice, it was funny, and yeah, all the yeah, I liked all the dog. It was just like a really nice Wes Anderson sort of
Little,
tale
yeah,
of
little.
boys and their dogs kind of thing.
It was kind of more. I thought it was kind of more linear than Wes Anderson films usually tend to be. It is kind of a straightforward adventure where they, like.
More like the Fantastic Mr. Fox style.
I haven't seen Fantastic Mr. Fox, but yeah, I'll take your word for it. But yeah, it's like I'm wondering if that's kind of a Kurosawa reference as well, because his films were all very straightforward hero's journeys, and that's that seems to be the case here, to the point where I thought that the ending was a little bit abrupt and just a little bit clean, and like they kind of do just foil the villain's plot and then that's it, with a with a character who is doing it off screen, and it was just like, oh, this is what happened, and now they win and everyone's happy. But the plot is not necessarily, certainly in a Wes Anderson film, it's not what you're focusing on. It's like,
Central, no, it's the journey, isn't
exactly.
it?
And there is a really good journey in this one, and I just, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And part of that for me was, I think, the kind of actual physical layout of the film. So like we've talked about how like obviously it's all kind of flat camera shots, and it's all straight on in a in that Wes Anderson perspective. But when it deviates from that, the environments are still constructed linearly. So there's this one kind of angled overhead shot where the dogs are all walking along, and they're still all walking in a straight line side by side as they are in the front shots, and like there's something behind them and there's a cliff in front of them, so like the world that they inhabit seems to be structured almost like a video game level where it's just traversing from left to right. And like that lends this really interesting sense of progression to the film, because they are kind of just moving from left to right throughout, like they were making their way through a video game. And yeah, I just thought it was a kind of really interesting way of showing the progression of the journey.
I did notice that, and even when wasn't there a split screen at some point where they're both there's like a close up on one on the dog and then the boy, and they're going in different. But they're sort of, it was a similar kind of thing where they're either both going the same way or they're going towards each other, but on different planes kind of thing. Yeah, there was lots of that sort of, or like somebody's above and somebody's below and they're kind of moving in towards each other.
There were a couple of sort of
really interesting
the split screen was used in a couple of places and just in a couple of really interesting ways as well. There's one which I noticed where there's one camera looking up from one position and one camera looking down from the exact same position in a way that would be just completely impossible to do in if you had an actual camera there. And I just thought there were just some interesting tricks and not odd. Well, yeah, they are kind of odd choices, but in a good way.
Yeah, just like really clever sort of storytelling, sort of visual storytelling, almost like a comic book kind of way of moving through space and things. Yeah, it was. It was really interesting. And it's just like it's charming. There's, lots of things that are very charming about it. But yeah, unfortunate. insensitivities, shall we say.
Yeah.
But
slightly tone deaf.
Yes. So we hope for better next time.
Yeah.
But
apart from all that, I really did enjoy the film. I thought it was a lot funnier than I was expecting. There were much more laugh out loud moments in it than
I laughed a lot.
Whereas the humor in his films tends to be like there are laugh out loud moments, but it tends to be kind of more just situational and wry. There are a lot of very very specific jokes and laugh out loud moments.
Yeah, not like one liner type things.
No, exactly.
Okay. So Han Solo. We hadn't announced that yet. Yeah, so we saw the trailer for the Han Solo solo film.
Yes.
Part of the extended Star Wars universe. It's the one that's been around on the internet, I think.
Yeah. There was nothing there new that I think I've been.
No, but I just came away from it feeling like I don't know if I'll even. I probably will go and see it.
Yeah, of course we'll have to see that.
Yeah, even if it's just to argue the toss about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, just my initial misgivings seeing it on the small screen, on the big screen. It's I'm just not convinced by Alden Ehrenreich.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a cool name.
It is.
I'm just not convinced. He's Han Solo for me at all. I think it's him, and I think it's also the dialogue. I'm just not convinced.
Yeah.
And although then you've got Donald Glover, and he looks like an amazing Lando, and all I've got to say is it should have been a Lando film.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think there's a lot of reasons that would have been a better choice. Okay, so I've been up and down on like the kind of Star. I can't call it the Star Wars Extended Universe, but it's the Star Wars Cinematic Universe now. And I've mostly been down on it because I just don't like universes in general. But like ever since they announced a solo film called Solo, I've been trying to get into a place where I can say, oh yeah, that maybe that is a good idea. Maybe that will be really good. And everything new I hear about it does not help with that. So yeah. I watched the trailer and, like, it's as slickly produced as any sort of, you know, big budget Star Wars film is, but I can't, as hard as I try, I can't read Alden Ehrenreich as Han Solo. He just doesn't have the same, he doesn't have the same accent, for one thing. He doesn't have, like, when the Star Trek remakes came out, the new Star Trek films, the Chris Pine ones, mm-hmm. one of the things that, like, everyone commented on and everyone immediately noticed was that Chris Pine had the Kirk swagger, like, down pat.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
when he sat in the chair, you thought, that's, you know, that's yeah. James T. Kirk.
And then you were just in and you were immersed. And yeah. everybody, Bones was Bones, yeah. like, everybody, Spock was Spock. They were just great.
Yeah, they had the manner, even without... like, what I read about the Star Trek remake was that he didn't watch Shatner because he didn't want to emulate him too closely.
Yeah, but they're not impersonations.
Yeah, exactly.
They just embodied those characters and the way those actors kind of did them.
Exactly. With Solo, I just can't see him as Han Solo. He's just a guy dressed in a Han Solo costume sitting in the chair.
yeah.
And obviously Solo has the camera on him through most of that trailer, and I spent every shot that he was on screen sort of looking at him saying, is this Han Solo? Is he doing a good job singing? And I just mm-hmm. couldn't see where it was. But then it would cut to Lando, who played by the fantastic Donald Glover, who is in maybe two or three shots in the whole thing, and they're both, like, really brief. And you look at him and you think, there's Lando. And he's
you're just like, yay, Lando. Yeah. You don't think, oh, there's Donald Glover.
No, exactly. He is
Lando.
Yeah, he's just sitting there looking like him.
He doesn't speak in the trailer, does he?
I think he does. I think he gets I seem to recall him getting a line, although I can't remember specifically.
Very, very brief. I hope he's in the film a lot.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that Star Wars has this thing about just making all the women look like they're clones. They're all this kind of particular type physically.
Mm-hmm.
This sort of, like, white brunette, you know, with a sort of pointy chin. And it's really weird. Mm-hmm. It's like, can't you change it up? Just, like, I don't know, stick in a redhead or, I don't know, someone from a different ethnicity.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I'm just putting it out there. But they all look the same, like they're from a Princess Leia sort of cosplay party or something.
Yeah.
It's just like, they don't all need to look the same. It's okay. We'll be okay.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they're just going to... that's going to be the thing where they, like, kind of retcon and establish that that's Han Solo's type. He just likes women who, like, like, maybe the main character, she'll put her hair in a braid and he'll just look over and be like, oh, I like that for some reason.
They just need to get out of that mold that they're in, because they've done it with all the new ones as well.
Mm.
The Rogue One, you know, she was part of that type. It's like, why does she look like all the other ones?
like Daisy Ridley has a sort of element of that as well.
And, yeah, exactly. Completely.
Yeah.
And then, and then we had the actual double, which was Keira Knightley.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's just like, enough now. Okay, mm-hmm. We know that you're really good at finding people who look a bit like Princess Leia.
Yeah.
That's happening.
The other thing is, it's like, from the trailer, it appears to be another heist film, which kind of suits Han Solo, but it's something we've kind of visited in Rogue One, and it's kind of, you know, a band of renegades,
and kind of in you know, that side mission in The Last Jedi.
Like, kind of, like, not explicitly, but it, like, A New Hope is sort of that as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be doing much new that I'm interested in. And, like, the dialogue that pertains to it in the... Like, it's the Woody Harrelson line where, like, it's him, he's standing there, he's looking at Han Solo, and he goes, I'm putting together a crew. And I'm just like, yeah, okay.
God,
dial it back a bit, Ocean's 11.
So, Yeah, so there's just that. That's a thing, and it's going to do something.
Yeah.
That's how I'm feeling about it right now.
I try not to sort of be...
too damning,
no,
yeah.
But... I've tried my best to like what I've seen about this film, and it's just not happening. And it just feels like it's going to further dilute the already kind of diluted Star Wars universe at this point.
I mean, because I'm usually excited about the Star Wars films, and you're a little more like, oh, I don't want extra Star Wars. I just want, you know, the sort of core Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I really liked Rogue One. Mm. I really loved that. So I'm surprised. Well, yeah, I didn't expect to be feeling this kind of about it,
no.
But I am.
But anyway, no, we'll definitely go and see it, though. You will see a review of it when it comes out here.
Yeah, we will, because it'll be fun. And there's always Lando.
Yep.
We need more Lando. So that is us for this episode, I think.
Yes, it is.
So, let us know what you think of either of those things, mm-hmm. if you've seen them. And just drop into our comments, say hello. Say hello to us on Twitter at ArgueTheCast.
Yep.
And we're in all the podcast places and on GameIndustry.com.
Yeah.
So until next time, Drew.
Cheerio.